Netcasts you love.
From people you trust.
This is TWiT.
Hi, this is Leo Laporte, and this is my Tech Guy podcast. This show originally aired on the Premiere Network on Saturday, August 18th, 2018. This is episode 1515. Enjoy. The Tech Guy podcast is brought to you by Rocket Mortgage by Quicken Loans, introducing Rate Shield Approval. If you're in the market to buy a home, Rate Shield Approval locks up your rate for up to 90 days while you shop. It's a real game changer. Learn more and get started at rocketmortgage.com/tech guy. Well, hey, how are you today? Leo Laporte here, the Tech Guy. Oh, yeah, time to talk about tech, computers, the internet, home theater, digital photography, smartphones. We've got smart watches. We've got augmented reality. Perhaps you've heard me give this spiel before. It's really anything with a chip in it, any kind of technology. We shall talk about. We shall. You and I shall. I woke up this morning to a fascinating story. We've talked a little bit, I think, about how Intel's the big chip manufacturer that makes the processors in most computers, not so much phones, but in the laptops and desktops, run up against a wall in manufacturing that's making it very difficult for some reason, we don't know why, for them to make new chips in. They designate these chips by the size of the wiring in the chip. And they describe it in billionths of a meter. That's a nanometer. And right now, our chips are 14 nanometers. And they really want to get down to 10 billionths of a meter. That's kind of impossibly small. Usually they say, well, that's 1/8 of a human hair. It's microscopic, right? It's 10 nanometers. They're having trouble doing it. Don't know why. There's an advantage. It's kind of a weird advantage you have in microprocessors that the smaller the process gets, the less heat, the more efficient, the faster, and oddly enough, the less expensive they get. So it's kind of a magical formula. It's one of the few things, your car to get smaller, faster, better, that's generally costs more, but not for a processor. It's a very different thing. We've run up against what they sometimes call Moore's Law. Moore's Law, which was formulated by Gordon Moore of Intel back in the dim, dark days of processors, I think before really the microcomputer revolution in the 60s, was that microprocessors, the number of transistors, and that's the fundamental unit on a chip, is a transistor. The number of transistors we can get on a processor will double every 18 months. And along with that, roughly a doubling in speed every year and a half. And it's amazing because it's held true for decades. It's starting to fall apart. Intel hasn't been able to double the number of transistors for some years now. I just read about a breakthrough that's, to me, fascinating and may bode well for the change in all of this. The folks at the Karlsruhe Institute of Technology, which I think is in Holland, KIT, have created a transistor that uses a single atom. What? I think you can't get smaller than that. I don't think, well, maybe you could. I should never say never, right? But this is a lot, one atom transistor. It works at room temperature. And, you're getting this amazing benefit of microprocessing again. It uses very little energy. About 1/10,000th of the energy that our current transistors and chips use. 1/10,000th. So imagine, we're getting now, I don't know how much smaller an atom is, but it's a lot smaller. It's a one atom transistor. Your typical USB memory stick has several billion transistors, right? But imagine if it had several trillion transistors. and it used 1/10,000th of the power. Well, I guess if it had several trillion, it would have to use 1/1,000th of the power, but that's still pretty good. Or 1/100th, whatever, I don't know. Orders of magnitude less. That's still pretty good. Now, I don't know how close they are to making this, but they are able to do it at room temperature. The single atom transistor in the past has worked, you know, at extremely low temperatures, like minus 273 degrees Celsius. But to have it work at room temperature is unbelievable. It's metal. No semiconductors are used. And that's why it's such low energy. Every once in a while, you know, you read stories like this and you think, well, the world's about to change. And then nothing happens. So, you know, we see these, I see these breakthroughs. And sometimes, for instance, I remember I was so excited by something called supercapacitors, which were these devices that would hold a charge. They could be charged instantly, basically super batteries. They just never took off, except we've seen them in a few applications. Do you ever get an electric screwdriver that you charge in 30 seconds? That's a supercapacitor in there. And now, maybe this will be the most widely used supercapacitor of all time. Samsung's putting a supercapacitor in the S Pen in the Note 9. So the pen holds a charge for 30 minutes, but you, if you want to get another 30 minutes, you just put it in the phone, and 20 seconds later, it's ready to go. Supercapacitor. So these things come, but they take time. We learned about supercapacitors a few years ago. Single atom transistors, though, is the kind of thing that could really change the world. A few years ago, I might have talked to you about something called cross point technology. This is a kind of a 3D memory technology that Intel had announced. 3 or 4 years later, they finally started coming out with cross point based memory and storage just this year. And it's still, we're still waiting. It's kind of maybe a little hard to, you know, still wait, but it's going to be a real transformation in the speed of computing. So the good news is, while we're hitting the limits of Moore's law, doesn't mean we're not getting better and faster. It's kind of amazing. Kind of fascinating. 8888 Ask Leo. That's my phone number. If you want to talk high tech, I'd love to do it with you. 888-827-5536. You can see I kind of dig this stuff. The website where we put all this hoorah is techguylabs.com. And here's the good news on that. It's free. So you can go to techguylabs.com and you'll find everything I talk about. You don't have to memorize anything. And for heaven forfend, you should try to write anything down while you're driving your car around town today. Nope, don't have to do it. Just go to techguylabs.com. And it will all be provided for you. 8888 Ask Leo, the phone number, 888-827-5536. What you up to? What's going on with your technology world? You got any questions? Need any help? I'm here for you. We'll go to the phones right after this. La 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 la. Hello, everybody in the chat room. Hello. Yeah, except quantum computing, nobody's got one. So when that happens, I'll tell you about it. Leo Laporte, the tech guy. I'm always nervous when I hear music played by Michael Cozio, because I feel like, I wonder if that performer has passed on.
Oh, well.
But we lost Sister Aretha. Lost Sister Aretha this week. That's so sad. Hello, that is that voice you hear is Kim Schaffer. You'll hear her voice again when you call 8888 Ask Leo. She is she's your operator. You're hello.
What is that from?
One ringy dingy.
It's
Lily Tomlin.
Edith Ann.
Yeah, it's Edith Ann, but it's the
another character.
Hello, Kim. Good morning. Did you have a wonderful week?
Uh, yeah.
Yeah. Just say yeah. That's the short answer.
Yeah.
As did I.
That's great.
Wonderful week. And have you been answering the phones all morning?
No.
Oh. But for a moment or two, I see. Yeah.
15 minutes.
Who should I?
How about Johnny in Atlanta? He wants to share his experience with the Surface Pro.
Go. Surface Go.
Surface Pro?
Surface Pro? Surface Go?
Surface Pro laptop?
Let's find out. Let's find out.
Tongue-tied.
Thank you, Kim. Hello, Johnny in Atlanta.
Hello, Leo. How are you?
I'm well. Which, sir? You just got a new Surface?
Surface Go.
Yeah, the Go. The little, the cutest computer ever made.
I totally agree, but let me tell you, I think I'm a glutton for punishment because I called you last year with my problem with my Surface Book. With the battery expanding, you know.
Yeah,
the,
I remember that. You know,
So I was like, okay, but, you know, Microsoft replaced it. And
yeah, they, it wasn't easy, but you got help, so you got it solved. So, yeah, might be time for another one. And this is a cute one. The Surface Go is the smallest Surface tablet that they offer. It's, what is it, 9.7 inches, 10 inches? It's about the size of an iPad. Coincidentally, it's about the price of an iPad, too, isn't it?
If you add everything together, it really is.
Did you add a keyboard and pen?
I did. You know, I went in the Microsoft store here in Atlanta, and so I bought it last weekend. And so, you know, I really liked what the one you had. You had the burgundy one.
I had burgundy, cool. And they have a blue, kind of a blue suede Alcantara that's nice, too.
Yeah, so I went ahead and got that. Now, one thing that turned me on about it, I thought, look at these multiple ways you can charge it, right? Not only with the proprietary charger that comes with it, but the USB-C charger.
Yeah, it still comes with a Surface charger. Microsoft doesn't seem to want to let that go. But, yeah, finally, they have USB-C charging, which for me is great because everything I use now, including my phone, my laptop, they're all USB-C charging. So I don't have to buy multiple. And the thing that always bothered me is the $100 proprietary charger that only charges one thing, and then Dell or HP or Lenovo puts out a new one, and then it doesn't work anymore, and you got to buy a new one. It just bugs the heck out of me. So I like Type-C charging.
So let me share an interesting story I want to share with you and whoever's getting this tablet. I also have the Pixel 1 phone, so it has the USB charger.
Yeah.
And so I plugged that into my Surface Go, and it didn't do anything. You could tell the battery wasn't charging. And I thought, well, maybe it's not enough amps or, you know, maybe this isn't compatible. So I ordered one off of Amazon that is, as the description says, USB-C charger for Microsoft Surface Go tablet.
Yeah.
I said, okay, that's exactly what I want. So I got it yesterday, and so this morning I had about a 90% charge on my Surface Go. I plugged that adapter in, Leo, and it killed the computer. I mean, just went completely black. And so I tried to turn it on and turn it on. It wouldn't turn on.
Oh, that's not good.
It was fried. So I went to the Microsoft store this morning.
That's really not good.
Okay, I wasn't ready to confess, okay? I just wasn't. I was like, okay. So I go to the store and I show
I don't know what happened. It just stopped working.
It just went blank. So I go into the store and I tell, you know, the technical people there try to help me and they can't get it to boot up and they said, we're just going to have to replace it. So while he's swapping that out, I said, well, which USB charger would you recommend? He says, I don't recommend any of them. And I says, why is that? He says, because Microsoft has not released the specs yet as far as the proper amp. And if you're not careful, your computer, he told me that. And so I was like, okay, I still didn't confess, but I fried it. But I think Microsoft needs to, you know, release something about this USB-C charger.
I'll tell you a couple of things. First of all, never, ever buy a USB charger on Amazon unless you're very sure about who's making it. Number one, there's a Amazon does not do much to police its product line. There's a lot of counterfeits on there. And remember that only about half the products you're buying are from Amazon. The other half are from third parties who may or may not use Amazon's shipping services. But those third party sellers, if it says you know, if it says, even if it says shipped by Amazon or fulfilled by Amazon, but it's from some other company, I'd be very careful because, USB-C is not a well-defined spec in general. And it is absolutely conceivable that you could get a charger that would be wired poorly or something. But the thing is, you know, whatever you got obviously was problematic. I've been charging my Surface Go on everything. But I'm using chargers that were made by Lenovo or by HP or by Google. They came with my Google Pixel, my Pixel Book charger. And so far, I have not had any problems at all. It's conceivable. We've heard of problems with badly wired USB-C cables hurting computers. And I think this is what happened to you. And the reason is there's supposed to be a resistor in there. There is a spec that should protect the computer. But you obviously got, I'm sorry, something that was not to spec. You know, there's a guy who works for Google named Benson Leong. I don't know if you've heard of his name. But Benson went around on Amazon and bought every USB-C cable he could buy and tested it. And then would put up a review saying, this one will fry your computer. This one will fry your computer. This one will fry your computer. Amazon finally started pulling these off. But for a long time, I would only buy USB-C cables that were Benson Leong approved. And apparently what was missing is a resistor that would protect the computer. But I think a major brand charger from any of the companies I mentioned, or Anker, which is very good, or Aoki, which is very good. You should be, Belkin, you should probably be all right. Is that you, Techie Bud, in the chat room? So you just posted the link. All right. So
it says, be the first to review this item. So that's another warning.
Bad sign.
So obviously I will give it a bad review.
Yeah, I would say, I would really, yeah, when that happens to you, absolutely, immediately put in, hey, by the way, this killed my computer. You'll be saving people a lot of trouble. Let me just look at this listing on Amazon. It's from, the name of the company is Superer.
Right.
Okay. Superer, $28.99. It says fit for Microsoft Surface Go tablet. I don't know if fit means it's appropriate fit or it just fits.
But,
Let's see. The output is 5 volts times 3 amps. That's 15 watts. 9 volts times 3 amps. That's 27 watts. 15 volts or 20. The most is 20 times 3 1/4, which would be 65 watts. None of those should hurt the Surface Go. Type-C charging is limited to 100 watts, which is what the only reason some computers you won't see Type-C charging. This is not good.
Well, shouldn't my Pixel 1, I haven't looked at it, I got the Pixel 1 phone.
It's just not enough wattage.
That's not enough to charge it?
No. Okay. If you had a Pixel 2, it would be. So this says sold by Superer and fulfilled by Amazon. So that's the key. I would be careful about third. This is not just for chargers. This is for everything on Amazon. Read the reviews. Check and see who it's sold by. Don't assume it's okay. Leo Laporte, the tech guy. Yeah, my best guess is that this is just... So that was what Benson Leong was protecting people against.
Right. I'm going to chop this. Now, interesting, again, I think I like to live dangerously. Yeah, I plugged it into my Google Pixel. Probably not wise. And it was fine. The Google Pixel was fine. You know, I realize it's probably too much. I'm probably not going to use it for the Google Pixel phone. But
Benson now has a website. This is actually a great website called Benson Approved at BensonApproved.com. And he talks about the issues. Some will charge most efficiently. Others might just fry your battery. Caped Crusader Benson Leong has been testing USB cables off Amazon. And it's not just the no-brand products that have been failing. So they fail in a variety of ways. Incorrect resistors seem to be a common problem. So I don't know if Benson does this. They're writing about him in the third. Oh, it's not related to Benson. Oh, that's funny. So it's not his site, Benson Approved, but at least it's a service. that somebody's provided by putting all of Benson's approved stuff. Benson's an amazing guy. For a long time, he posted on. Let me see. Yeah, he's posted on Google Plus. So he has a Google Plus Type C group where he posts his the actual reviews and discussions. So I would read that. Now, having said that, you just got you had bad luck, and the good news is
I did, and I'm gonna send it back, and I'm gonna write a bad review.
Yeah,
and hopefully no one else will fry their machine.
Yeah, no kidding.
And hopefully no Microsoft store is listening to this show today.
We don't know his name. We don't know who he is. It's probably an easy thing for them to fix. So
it surprised me that it would. It just immediately died when I plugged it in.
Yeah, it fried it. Yeah,
right.
It sent too much current back, I think.
So anyway, well, they were really nice at the store, as they always are. I got a new one. I'm prepping.
You're building a dossier, though. A dossier with Microsoft. Uh oh. Here he comes again. But the Surface Go is so cute, isn't it? Now, do you like it? Are you going to use it, you think? Or is it's kind of like a second computer?
Yeah, I'm a software developer.
Oh,
you know? So
okay.
It didn't have all the bells and whistles. But when I'm traveling and I need to support my clients, you know, and I don't need all the full power, you know, that my Surface Book.
Perfect.
It's going to be
fine.
It's going to be fine.
Yeah.
You know, for little projects and stuff like that, it's going to be great. And, you know, I carry this in the iPad mini with me now because, you know, you don't feel weighted down by your technology.
Very nice.
I'm real pleased. So I'm real pleased.
I think it's good for that. Well, it's great to talk to you again. Thanks,
all right,
Johnny.
Leo.
All right. Thanks for the warning. All right.
Okay.
See you later.
Bye-bye.
Bump de bump. Bump cheek conk. That's the Red Hot Chili Peppers, I think. All I know is it's time for Scott Wilkinson.
I'm pretty sure it is the Red Hot Chili
Pepper. Who is a Red Hot Chili Pepper of a AV reviewer. Hello, Scott Wilkinson.
Hey, Leo, how's it going?
So the folks at Hisense say we've got our dual laser 100-inch projection, and we want to send it to Scott. And then Scott says, I have no room.
I have no room.
I have no room for it.
It's a big thing.
They're trying to.
I mean, it's a big screen. It doesn't take up a lot of room in your room. That's true. It's a box that sits near the wall.
But you need 100 square inches or 100 diagonal inches.
100 inch diagonal inches of wall space.
Wall space.
Right. And you must, install it there. And unfortunately, I mean, I really wish I could accept it and take it and look at it and use it and work with it. You guys must have had some fun with it last week. I think you and Robert Heron took
did, and we liked it. But I'm interested in the dual laser because I think it'll have better color.
I expect you're right. The one you see, the one you have, is a single laser.
One laser, all three colors, R, G, and B.
Right.
And the way they
you
do
know
it
how that works?
No.
Did you look at that? It's kind of interesting.
How?
It's actually a blue laser, and the blue laser hits a rotating wheel that is coated with a yellow phosphor material. And so when the yellow phosphor material is struck by blue light, blue photons, they combine. Some of the blue photons get absorbed, and the yellow phosphor emits yellow, and the blue that gets through combines with it, and blue plus yellow equals white. And so they get white light. And then I'm pretty sure.
Wait a minute. Blue plus yellow equals white?
When you're talking about emissive light, when you're talking about reflected light.
Because I thought blue plus yellow was green.
It is when you're talking about printed inks that light reflects off.
I learned that in kindergarten.
Exactly. Little Blue and Little Yellow. You remember that book?
Yeah.
Actually.
So this is the difference between reflected and emissive.
Emitted light. Exactly. Blue plus yellow emitted light equals white.
Wow.
Yep.
Wow.
It's kind of interesting, huh?
Fascinating, actually.
Yeah. And so you still then need... Remember we talked a week or two ago about DLP projectors, single chip DLP projectors, and how they require a color filter wheel?
Yes.
And so generally these DLP projectors, they have a lamp typically, and that produces white light. The white light goes through this wheel that's spinning really fast, and it's got pie wedges of color filters.
Every time I hear about DLP, I think I'm blown away by the ingenuity of modern mankind. I mean, it's just
amazing.
It doesn't. It's such a Rube Goldberg device.
I know. It seems so kludgy. You can't imagine how it would work.
We've just used two phrases that probably many of our younger audience members have no idea who Rube Goldberg was. He was a 30s cartoonist who created crazy contraptions like Mousetrap. And then kludge is a computer science word that that really means just a kind of a crazy, another word for crazy contraption, just a kind of, but it has a negative connotation a little bit.
It's true. It's true. It's like sort of you stuck something together to try and make it work, and maybe it will, and maybe it won't.
It might work, efficient. But it's not beautiful. It's not elegant in any way.
Exactly.
On the other hand, I think the DLP is quite elegant.
I do too. It's amazing how well it works. In fact, when you go out to a digital cinema, there's one of two technologies is being used, either DLP or LCOS. And in the case of a Dolby cinema, it's DLP for sure. Now, in that case, they have three DLP imagers, one for red, one for green, one for blue. So you don't need this color filter wheel. But it's still amazing to me that on the surface of a DLP chip are these super tiny microscopic mirrors that jiggle back and forth and reflect the light either toward the screen, the lens that's going to go towards the screen, or away from that lens. So you get lighter or darker. And you were talking about Moore's Law earlier, and the same thing I think can apply to these DLP chips. How tiny can you make a mirror on a little stalk that jiggles back and forth really quick?
How tiny are those mirrors?
Well, they're tiny. I can't remember the exact dimensions, but they're super tiny.
That's just kind of amazing.
You can't see them except if under a microscope.
Wow.
It just looks like a sort of a silvery sheen when you look at the front of a DLP chip, actually called a digital micro mirror device, or DMD.
It's DLP, amazing to me that the mirrors somehow flip in the right sequence too.
Yeah. And not only that, they zip back and forth. They can only have two positions, and they're typically, those positions are, I believe, 12 or 14 degrees apart. And that's enough to aim the light that's hitting them either towards the lens or away from the lens. And they go back and forth quickly enough so that depending on how much time they spend in the on position versus the off position, that determines the brightness of the light that's being reflected towards the screen for that particular mirror.
There's also a term, as one would expect in this, called wobulation.
Oh, yes. Another older term that isn't really used much anymore. It was used because these mirrors move so fast that they can actually, each one can actually reproduce two different pixels. And that's how most, virtually all 4K DLP projectors, at least those for the home, that's exactly the technique they use.
They're really only 2K, but because of wobulation, they're 4K.
Exactly,
I think you're making this up.
I'm not.
If you told this to a kid and then added the wobulation, they would for sure say, "Come on, you're making this up. That's not how it works."
Now most manufacturers of DLP displays do not like that word because it sort of sounds silly,
like wobble.
And funny. It's wobbling. But, I call it pixel wiggling. So is that any better? I don't know.
it actually goes back to radar, the days of radar wobulation.
Oh, yeah?
Yeah.
I didn't know that.
Yeah, according to Wikipedia, it's used to describe advanced radar waveform modulations.
Mm-hmm. Well, that's what it is. It's a modulation.
Mm-hmm. Sure, he says. Of course. What else would wobulation be?
No, it's
I think wobulation is what happens when I go home at closing time and
trying to
ride my bicycle home. It's
trying to wobulate.
I'm sorry, officer.
Home.
It's wobulation time, which I don't do, by the way. Children.
In fact, that's what that Hisense projector uses. It uses
wobulation.
Wobulation.
Oh, I'm going to ask the Hisense guys when they come in. So, is this using wobulation?
Yeah, because
they'll deny it, right?
Well, they'll say, we'd prefer you not use that word.
What do you say? Wiggling?
Pixel wiggling.
Okay, I don't think that's
any
better.
Pixel wiggling. Yeah, because the mirrors are actually forming one pixel over here and another pixel right next door.
I thought DLP would be gone, but it's not.
It's not. Nope, it's not. It's now mostly in inexpensive DLP home projectors and more expensive ones like the Hisense. I mean, the Hisense is pretty good. 100-inch screen for $10,000.
The Christie Mirage at my local theater is using DLP.
Right, exactly. But that's true 4K, and it's, you know, that's...
No wobulation there.
$250,000.
Find more on this and all AV topics at Scott's site, avsforum.com. He's editor there. And joins us each week. Thank you, Scott. Leo Laporte, the tech guy. I'm sorry, I derailed your show with wobulation.
That's fine. Wobulation
what
is great. I love
great
it.
What a great word.
It is. I love that word.
Wow. All right. Let me set up your TikTok, and you can take right. over.
And by the way, I'll be back at 2:30 today.
Oh, yes. We record Scott today.
Records.
Thank you.
Sure.
Would you like any soy curls for the road?
They actually sound pretty good to me.
Yeah, you're a vegetarian, right?
Well, I'm a pescatarian. Yeah.
I don't why Andy recommended these and then why I bought them. Delicious protein strips. So you soak them.
Oh, really?
Yeah,
you
have
to eat them out of the bottom.
No,
bag?
I thought when he said soy curls, I thought these would be like chips. No,
chips,
you don't eat
right.
them straight. You soak them for 10 minutes in a bowl of water. You drain excess water. You place in a skillet, sprinkle 4 tablespoons of Butler Chick-style seasoning or add your favorite seasoning or sauce. Heat on medium heat and stir until lightly browned. You know what I'm going to do?
That's kind of like noodles.
Taco Tuesday, I'm gonna replace our regular ground beef with soy curls and see if the child notices.
Now, is this a weight loss thing or just...
No. It's a vegetarian thing, I think.
It's a vegetarian thing, yeah. But you also got some meat products in that box, right?
No, that's a different box. I had a big day today. Ah. I got Bull and Cleaver Biltong. This is supposed to be the jamón ibérico, the prosciutto of dried beef. All right, I better give you the con here.
All right, it's only thank going you downhill. Very much.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. It's only going downhill for
yes.
me.
Yes. The prosciutto.
Hey, everybody.
Of dried meat.
Nice to see you all. I have a very fun evening planned. Today, in fact, is my 28th wedding anniversary.
Aww. That's nice.
Yep. So we're going to the Hollywood Bowl.
Oh.
We're going to hear the LA Phil and Gustavo Dudamel with the guitar duo Rodrigo y Gabriela.
Ooh, how fun. That'll be fun.
Do you know those? Do you know that duo?
Yes.
They're amazing.
Yes.
Acoustic guitar, man and a woman. They're described as acoustic guitar shredders.
Wow. That's just to get the young folk in the door, I think.
It's true. It's true. And the Hollywood Bowl is pretty full for this concert.
Oh, what fun.
It's going to be a lot
Happy
of fun.
Anniversary to you. And
thank you.
Lovely
and Joanna.
Spouse, Joanna.
Yes, Mrs. Scott, as she's known in the
Mrs.
chat room.
Mrs. Scott.
Only in the chat room. You know, when we go to a conference that it's her conference and I'm tagging along, I'm Mr. Joanna.
Mr. Joanna. Yeah, see, yeah. That's fair.
It's fair. Exactly. So, hey, Emily the Strange, you're a veggie too. That's good to know. Tech San Diego is saying, looking for a 32-inch TV that doubles as a computer monitor, primarily used as a computer monitor. Is there a theoretical limit for a computer monitor? I don't know what you mean by limit. Limit of what? I don't really look at TVs that small. And I remember a time when a 32-inch TV was really big, but it's not so big anymore. So I'm not sure what you mean, Tech San Diego. Theoretical limit of what? Thank you, Dr. Mom, Grandma. Thanks, everybody. Yeah, it's very exciting, actually. 28 years ago today, we got married in lovely Pasadena, California.
It's a long time being married.
I know.
That's good. Congratulations.
And it's good. Thank you.
Yeah.
Emily the Strange, glad you remembered your anniversary.
That's true.
Yeah, I don't forget things.
You going to stick around for the top of the hour?
Sure, have to.
All right. Leo LaPorte, the tech guy. 8888 Ask Leo, the phone number. On we go to line one. Tom, Wilmington, North Carolina. Hello, Tom.
Hello, Leo. It was really good talking to you.
Good to talk to you. Thank you.
I got a situation here. I've got a neighbor that he says, "Oh, you know computers, don't you?" And I said, "Well, yeah, somewhat."
When anybody says that to me, I say no.
Well,
just a little word of advice.
This could be a thing. Now he confessed to me. He stepped in the and really confessed that he got suckered into calling a number with his iMac. And then the guy, he was having troubles with Alexa, and he was getting very frustrated. Now he calls this number. And they said, could they have access to his computer? Oh, he did.
The real question on this, though, because obviously calling a number isn't necessarily bad. I mean, there are legitimate support people out there. Where did that number come from? Was it a pop-up on the screen?
Well, yeah.
Yeah, that's what
it
you
was
don't
on
want.
The screen. No, yeah.
That's what you want to avoid. Okay. What did it say on that pop-up?
Well, it did lead you to think that they were a true help for Alexa.
Well, why wouldn't they do that? Now, did he go to Amazon.com and then it said, here's the number to call?
Well, it had Amazon in there.
Well, that's easy. Guess what? I'm Jeff Bezos. Nice to meet you. I am the richest man in the world, and I'd like access to your computer. Doesn't mean you believe me if I say that. So let me ask you this question. Did he know he was having trouble with his Echo? Is he sitting on his computer and it pops up saying, I see you're having trouble with your Echo?
Yeah, well, now he didn't get into much of that. He's really paranoid with the fact now that he did wrong.
Yes, he did do wrong. Okay, so here's the thing. I'll just give you the bottom line really quickly. If at any point in your day-to-day computing, something pops up on your screen and says, I'm from Microsoft, I'm from Amazon, I'm from anybody, and we see you have a problem, call our helpline. It's an 800 number. That is a lie. That is a lie. It's an easy lie to perpetrate. It's very easy to do. You can put code on a website, sometimes against the website's will, because a lot of websites have, just like computers, have security flaws, and bad guys look for those flaws. They have these exploit kits they can install on the website. And what happens is when you surf to that website, you get a pop under maybe. The website looks normal and everything. Then when you close your browser, there's this window on your screen. Doesn't even look like it came from the browser, right? There's this window on the screen that says, this is Microsoft. And you call that number. Now, the number is going to connect with a help guy. Oftentimes, a real help guy who's moonlighting. I've heard stories that sometimes in these call centers, not in the U.S., but outside the U.S., they'll work for a company like Microsoft during the day, and at night they'll run a scam. This is the same as if somebody called you and says, I'm calling from Windows, and we see you have a problem. We'd like to help you. So there's two things that now he's opened the door to, two ways to exploit him. First of all, did they take money?
Well, no. But he's paranoid with the fact that he says, well, I guess I need to wipe the drive.
Well, I'm going to continue. Says, well, hold on. So if they ask for a credit card number and they take money, well, that's often point one of the scam. By the way, they now have your credit card number. If they don't ask for money and they say, oh, we're just going to do this out of the goodness of our heart, but you need to give me access to your computer. The minute you give them access to your computer using a remote access product, they can do anything they want. Whether, you know, you could stare at the screen. Yeah. You don't know what they're doing. So they can do anything they want. At this point, it's prudent, unless he could verify that this was a legitimate service offered by Amazon, it would be prudent to assume that his computer is now infected in some way.
This is what his paranoia is.
It's not paranoia. He's absolutely right. The computer might be infected. And there's no way of knowing. Now, I know there'll be people who will say, oh, no, you bring it into the shade tree mechanic down the street. Oh, that's all right. I can fix that. First, let me look and see. Oh, yeah, I found a couple. I removed them. Let me run my program, Malwarebytes, and see if I can find any more. And you can find some stuff and remove some stuff. The problem is just you don't know because depending on how sophisticated this operation was, they can put stuff on there you can't detect. Let me repeat that. They could put stuff on there you can't detect. And at that point, you don't know what it is. The fact that they didn't ask for money in some ways is a bad sign. Because they're not doing this out of the love of mankind. Their love for humanity. They're doing it for profit. So there's profit somewhere in this. And if they didn't ask for money, well, now he's right to be paranoid. The stock answer I give everybody in this case is you must, he's right, wipe the drive and reinstall Windows. You can back up your data. Your data is probably safe, but you should wipe the drive and reinstall Windows. It's almost impossible to know what they did, and therein lies the problem. Maybe they did nothing. Maybe you're erasing the computer for no reason. Maybe they did something. You just can't tell. And there's nobody, no shade tree mechanic who can say, well, I can with certainty remove it all. They can't. So your friend's right to be paranoid. Who knows what they're doing? I don't know. You want me to tell you some of the things they can do? They could put a keystroke logger on there that's phoning the home office with every time he types his password and login and bank account number, things like that, charge credit card numbers. They could be putting a remote access Trojan on there that gives him full access to everything he's doing, including the camera, the microphone, and every screen. There's all sorts of things they can do. So we just don't know. That's the problem.
Yeah, Leo?
Yeah.
Yeah, yeah. Let me ask you this, though. When you wipe the drive, does it actually erase everything, or does it just flag it to say that that space is available?
That's exactly right. So when wiping the drive, the real way to do this, actually, you're correct, but in most it is conceivable that they could put malware on there that wiping the drive does not remove. It's possible to put malware, for instance, in the memory of the graphics processor, and you can't remove it. But we're going to hope that that's not the case. So wiping the drive, you're confusing two different issues. Where one is where you erase a file, but you can recover it. But you're not worried about that. What you're worried about is any software that's been left on the machine that's malware. And it's sufficient to reinstall Windows. So you don't have to do some nuke the drive thing. You just need to uninstall. You need to erase it, format it quickly, whatever, and put Windows back on.
Was there any kind of diagnostic to where it'll do ones and zeros?
You don't need to do that. You don't need to do that. That's not necessary. Okay. That's only if somebody's going to have access to the drive and try to unerase stuff.
I see.
That's a different problem. Your problem is there's software, could potentially software running every time he turns on his computer that's doing something malicious. So all you need to do is wipe out the computer and reinstall all the programs. You can back up data because data is theoretically safe, although, you know, it is conceivable that you could put stuff in the data, too, that would reactivate it. But generally speaking, these guys are not – they don't have that much. How long did the guy spend on the computer?
Yeah, not that long, because when he realized what was going on, he unplugged the Ethernet.
Oh, smart man.
And told him. Yeah, and then – well, but he said, I was too late. He says they were on there not very long. He thinks only about a few minutes. But he realized and he unplugged everything. Now encryption. He says he was so paranoid that he set up encryption on his iMac.
And
well, that's unrelated.
Oh, really?
Yeah. I'm Leo Laporte, the tech guy. More calls right after this. I'll spend some time talking about this. But so the confusion here is encryption isn't going to help him at all, because when he's using his computer, it's unencrypted, right? Otherwise, he wouldn't be able to use it. And whatever they put on there has access to everything he has when he's logged in. So encryption saves him nothing, right? Does that make sense?
Yes.
You don't have to worry about unerasing files, because they're not doing that. What you really want to do is get it, rid of any malware they put on there. 2 minutes, you know, if I'm this guy. So tell me, so you don't know exactly the sequence of events.
Well, no, this is just what he told me.
Yeah.
Is that he at least had the wherewithal to unplug the Ethernet.
Well, but that doesn't necessarily, I mean, if I'm the bad guy, I put on whatever I'm going to put on immediately.
Yeah. Yeah. Okay.
So I think that's just, you know, your friend is prudent and smart, and this is what he should anticipate is, you know, they put something on there and he should wipe it now. He doesn't need to encrypt. He doesn't need to do a full on, you know, D-ban wipe. He just needs to erase and reinstall. Okay, Scott Wilkinson.
Hey.
All yours, my friend.
Thank you so much. Just typing a response here. Who was it? Oh, Mike B was saying I would probably like a John Williams concert at the Hollywood Bowl, and it's true. John Williams' music is very good. It's almost a little overdone in my opinion, so it wouldn't probably be my first choice. But hey, I wouldn't turn down a ticket. But this guitar duo, we've seen them on TV, and they're really phenomenal, really, really special. So that with the LA Phil and Gustavo Dudamel, who I love as a conductor. I mean, man, oh, man, he just I get the sense that he plays the orchestra like an instrument. I mean, of course, all conductors do, but he does it in such a way that it becomes more apparent that he has brought them together into a unified whole better than most conductors I've seen. So I'm really looking forward to that. That's going to be great. Lawn Dog was telling me about some friends of his in his neighborhood where they're celebrating their 70th wedding anniversary. Unless we get a medical breakthrough, I don't think Joanna and I are going to make it to 70. No, I kind of doubt it. Mike B. Oh, with John Williams conducting John Williams music, you know, that could be really good, because certainly I wish I could have seen Stravinsky conduct his own music. I think that would have been really fun. hey, Knox Harrington, exactly right. Schindler's List, the subject matter forced him to dial it back a bit. John Williams. Very good. So, let's see. Who else has got a question here? We were talking about, I think, was it Tech in San Diego or Mike B? I forget who it was now. Tech in San Diego. Using TV for computer monitor. And is there a theoretical limit to the size of a computer monitor? And the answer is no. You know, large screen TVs can be used as computer monitors. Projectors can be used as computer monitors, no problem. The real difficulty comes in when, as you get larger and larger, if you're putting text on the screen or a spreadsheet or something like that, then as the screen gets larger and larger, the pixels get larger and larger, and the text becomes less and less sharp. So you want a higher resolution the larger you go. So, you know, for a big, large screen TV, this is actually one thing where 4K makes a lot of sense. But, you know, and even 8K, we're just going to start seeing 8K TVs, believe it or not. We're going to start seeing 8K TVs very soon. We already saw examples at CES. We've seen them for years, but Samsung announced they're actually going to have a product that's 8K. Now, for video, I have been pretty sour on this idea because there's no content. And so everything's got to be upscaled. And the upscaling is pretty good. Samsung introduced with this 8K TV at CES an artificial intelligence upscaler, video processor, AI processor, which did a remarkably good job of upscaling. So if you got good upscaling, okay, that's fine. You certainly can't see the increase in resolution unless you get right up to the screen. But, you know, for a computer monitor, that would be really great. If you had a huge screen at 8K and you were doing a computer monitor, you'd have tons of real estate. You could see all the text very sharp and crisp, and it would be great. Tech in San Diego said, in fact, that he is he does a lot of cosmology and astronomy, so having a wider view of the universe would be good, and I agree. Another really good application for super high resolution is medical imaging. Where, you know, if you're in an operating room and you've got a robotic thing that's poking around in somebody's body, you want to see the highest resolution you can. And you're looking at a computer monitor pretty close to your face, presumably. Either that or you're looking at a really big one a little farther away. In either case, you want to be able to see as much detail as possible because millimeters, microns maybe even count. So that's... that's something to think about. Somebody asked me earlier about an Integra soundbar, and I had never heard of an Integra soundbar before. Looks like I've run out of buffer. So in the chat room, I can't see who it was. This Integra soundbar is an Atmos soundbar, so it's got upward firing speakers as well as front firing speakers. The only, and it's probably good. Integra products are very good. It's kind of like the Lexus of Onkyo, shall we say. It's good. It probably works very well, but it has its own AV receiver. And it looks to me after a cursory inspection that you cannot use it with a regular AV receiver. You must use its AV receiver, which has four HDMI inputs and a few other things, but a special proprietary speaker cable that goes from the AV receiver to the soundbar. So I never like a closed proprietary system. That's going to be a problem. Yo Dave is asking, what's the recommended website for buying a bias light? Should the light be on any time the room isn't bright? The answer is yes. The second question. The first question is CinemaQuest.com. I believe it's .com. I can look that up real quick. But they make the bias light that I use and the bias light that I recommend. So CinemaQuest Inc. Sorry, CinemaQuest Inc. INC.com gets you to the CinemaQuest website, and there you can buy the Ideal Loom. IDEAL-LUME, Ideal Loom Bias Light. I highly recommend that. It's now based on LEDs. And that's what time we have.
Scotty, you're the best. Happy anniversary.
Thank you
have
so much.
Have a wonderful time tonight. Well, hey, how are you today? Leo Laporte here, the tech guy. Time to talk about tech, computers, the internet, home theater, digital photography, smartphones, smart watches, all that jazz. 8888-ASK-LEO. That's the number, 888-827-5536. That's toll-free from anywhere in the U.S. and Canada. Outside that area, you can still call. Just use Skype out or something like that. It won't cost you anything because it's a toll-free number in the U.S. 888-827-5536. Now I've confused you and I apologize. TechGuyLabs.com is the website and the number's written there too. TechGuyLabs.com. You don't have to remember anything. It's all on the website and there's no charge. There's no sign up. TechGuyLabs.com. So it's interesting to hear that they have, and that's not surprising in the least, that the bad guys, the malefactors, have spread their wings a little bit. It used to be that the pop-up you'd see on almost invariably on Windows machines was from Microsoft. I put that in air quotes. You can't see it, but imagine air quotes. Microsoft, not really from Microsoft, obviously. Now they're saying Amazon, your Echo. That's interesting. That's really interesting. So far, I don't know of any malware way to get your Echo to say anything bad. You know, I don't know of any, you know, your Echo just pipes up saying, oh, I'm having problems. Call this number. But that's only so far. I can see a day where that happens. You install a malicious task without knowledge. Your knowledge, you know how you get those tasks, and you can just add them with your voice. And what maybe it's a malicious task that somehow does that. But right now, the real place you see it is as you're using your browser. Websites will using JavaScript. Sometimes intentionally, sometimes you can't blame the site. They just have some, you know, there's a security flaw in the site and a bad guy put some software on it. And it pops up a message that says, hey, this is Amazon. I see you're having trouble with your Echo. That's interesting that they're doing that. Call this number. When you call a number like that, you're going to have two things. One is they'll often ask for money, in which case, you know, they're ahead already. And then remote access. Don't give anybody remote access to your computer. I guess this would be the bottom line. Don't give anybody. And they'll be very persuasive. They're, you know, they'll scare you. There's a couple of ways that people can get your mind, your logical reasoning to turn off. The number one way hackers use to get your reasoning to go away, your normal suspicion to go away, is fear. I got an email the other day that was really effective at this. Scared the heck out of me till I really thought about it. Maybe you've seen this. This is a common scam now. The email subject is, your password is, and then, you know, monkey123, but a real password of yours. Wow. When you get that one, that's a little scary. In the subject, you're not going to skip that. Because you thought that was secret. Now, here's the thing to remember. It should leap into your mind. Is that there have been numerous password breaches of databases. Many of them have passwords in them. In fact, there's so many now that there's a great website that's called Have I Been Pwned? Pwned is the hacker word for owned or taken over. It's Have I Been PWNED.com. And when you go there, you can see if your email has been compromised. So you enter in your email address. I'm going to enter in the one I use most commonly. And then you press the button, Pwned. Oh, yes. Oh, no. Pwned on 19 breached sites. So that email that I just entered into, have I been, and by the way, this is safe to do. It's reasonable to be nervous when you see something like this. That email that I entered in was used on many, many sites, because it's my common email, and it says there were breaches at Adobe. 153 million Adobe accounts were breached. At Bitly, at Discus, at Dropbox, at Evony, which is a game, at Kickstarter, at Last.fm, this is me, LinkedIn, Little Monsters, which is Lady Gaga's fan site. I didn't know I was a member. Apparently I am. MySpace. Now, it's probably the MySpace one that this hacker got. Okay. So these breaches mean that my email address, and in some cases the password that was associated with that account, are out there, you know, floating around. You know, once they're breached, they're downloaded. Sometimes they sell them. A lot of times they just post them. It's out there. That's how Have I Been Pwned works. Troy Hunt, the guy who created it, basically goes into these breach posts and looks for email addresses and then adds you to this giant database. So I'm in it. I'm in quite a bit, as a matter of fact. And in some cases, my password's in it. Must have been this password. Now, the password that was in the subject matter of the email was the one I haven't used for a very long time. And this is almost always the case, you hope. This is why you want to have a different password for every site. You don't want to reuse passwords at all. Because if that happened to be a password that I've been using for years that I've used on many, many sites, that would be bad. Your password is monkey123. Oh, no. So I open the email. I wish I could find this because I'd love to read it to you. Let me see if I can find an example. Because this is so common now. It's a phishing scam. I don't have the one that I got, but I'll read you one from one of the Bruce Schneier's written about it, Brian Krebs. No, that's not it. Basically, they said, so we have your password. And we noticed that you logged into an adult site. And we hacked you. And because apparently somehow because they had my password, I don't know. We hacked you. And we recorded you looking at this adult site plus the adult content. Now, you will send me $2,000 in Bitcoin, or I will take this video and say, by the way, I also have your contact list and send it to everyone on your contact list. Now, I think a lot of people would get this email and be, what? And this is the key. Remember, I was saying, I'll put a link to the Krebs on Security blog post, by the way, on this. You don't know me. I finally found the email. And you're thinking, why you received this email, right? Well, I actually placed a malware on the porn website. And guess what? You visited this website to have fun. While you were watching the video, your web browser acted as a remote desktop and a keylogger, which provided me access to your display screen and webcam. Right after that, my software gathered all your contacts from Messenger, Facebook, and email. What exactly did I do? I made a split-screen video. First part recorded the video you were viewing. Next part recorded you. What should you do? Well, and by the way, this one only asked for $1,400. $1,400 is a fair price for a little secret. You'll make the payment via Bitcoin. Anybody, just show of hands. No one knows you're listening. Anybody fall for this? The good news is you have to send Bitcoin, which is so devilishly hard that most people probably just get, I don't know what, I give up. I'll cross my fingers. This is a scam. And the fear is the key, and this is how we got into this. Bad guys will use fear to get you to act without thinking. You've been hacked. You've been spied upon. They'll use other emotions, too. When doing social engineering, this is a very famous case, a social engineer hacker called customer service at a phone company. My husband just left the house. They are playing, by the way, a recording from YouTube of a baby crying in the background. And I have to log in to pay this bill or they're going to turn the power out. He's not going to be back for a week. Can you just give me my husband's password to his phone account so I can get this text? And, of course, a customer service rep, not fear now, but sympathy, does it. Gives the bad guy. Actually, I think the way this one works, this is how they steal your phone number. I need a new SIM. Send me the new SIM. And they'll do it. So fear, sympathy, sadness, there's lots of ways you can be manipulated. Be aware, though. Be really aware. When you get an email or a link, when you get a pop-up on your screen that plays upon these strong emotions, pause. They want to turn off your brain. Don't fall for it. Keep thinking. What are they trying to do? Is this possibly a malicious attempt to hack me? Is it possible? And the minute somebody tries to or asks you for access to your computer, just say no. Nope, not going to give you remote access. That's just too dangerous. Never give a stranger remote access to your computer. All right, we're going to take a break. I had to give that little sermon because I worry about you. I worry about you out there. It's so dangerous. 8888-ASK-LEO, the phone number. Back to the phones we go right after this. Tech Guy Podcast is brought to you today by Rocket Mortgage. Your new home will be brought to you by Rocket Mortgage, if I have anything to do with it. Rocket Mortgage from Quicken Loans, the number one lender in the country, number one in customer satisfaction, 8 years in a row, according to J.D. Power, number one in volume two, and that's only recently, that's since December, when they kind of outpaced the big bank, you know. And I'm glad they did because the last home loan we got was from that big bank. And that's such an antiquated thing to go into the bank and, you know, you got to dress up a little bit. Please, may I have some money to buy a home? And the banker says, well, perhaps, but here. And he drops a stack of papers in your lap and says, fill out this application and get back to me. So we did and got back to him. And then for the next literally 2 months, they kept saying, call your bank. We need statements from 2010. Oh, what about pay stubs for your last job with Tech TV in 1998? Oh, what about this? What about that? We faxed, took 2 months. We almost lost the house. It was terrible. I will never do business with a big bank again. Fortunately, I don't have to, because along comes Quicken Loans and Rocket Mortgage, and it's a game changer. Because of rising interest rates, only recently have rates started going up. It's been fairly stable for the last, 5 years? But the rates are going up. And I know that's a problem because as you're out there house hunting, every day extra you take, there's the risk, my rates are going to go up and it's going to cost me more. And, you know, a quarter point interest rate goes up on a 30-year fixed and you're talking tens of thousands of dollars over the life of the loan. That's a big deal. That puts pressure on you. You don't want pressure when you're looking for a house. You want it to be a zen experience. You're finding the perfect place. Wouldn't it be nice to say as long as 3 months to look at the house? That's exactly what Quicken Loans and Rocket Mortgage are doing. So let me go through the process. First of all, when you go to get a loan, you do it on your phone, you do it on your computer, you go to rocketmortgage.com/techguy. It's very straightforward. There's not a big stack of papers. You just answer a few simple questions. Because of their relationships with all the financial institutions, all you have to do is give them permission. They can go out, get the information they need. The first step, they call it the whole thing the power buying process. The first step is called qualified approval. And they do that within a few minutes while you're on the phone practically, you know, on the application on the website. They will go through your income, assets, and credit and give you pre-qualified approval. Yep. Based on what you've told us, good. Then they have a loan officer look at it. And this all is behind the scenes. You don't have to worry about it. And within 24 hours... They're very fast, not 2 months, not 2 days, not 2 weeks, 24 hours, they're going to give you what they call verified approval. Now, that means basically you got the loan. When you go to make an offer on a house, the seller will see you as a cash buyer because you say, no, I got this letter. I got this letter from Rocket Mortgage that says I'm good for it. I got the loan. That's awesome. That gives you the strength of a cash buyer. You're right at the front of the line. But something else happens too. They call it rate shield approval. It's brand new. It's exclusive to Rocket Mortgage. They lock up your rate. They say, no, you got the verified approval. Now, that rate we just quoted you, that's guaranteed for up to 90 days. You shop, you take your time, you look for the perfect house. Don't feel any pressure. The rate cannot go up. It can go down. If rates go down, I don't think they're likely to, but if they did, your rate would go down. They are likely to go up, but your rate will not go up. Either way, you win. That's awesome. Rate shield approval. It's exactly why Quicken Loans has become the number one lender in the country, because they think about the customer's experience and they make it better and better and better. To get started, it's very simple. Do the whole thing at rocketmortgage.com/techguy. It'll happen in minutes. It's very quick. Now, here's a couple of things the lawyers say. I have to tell you, rate shield approval is only valid on certain 30-year purchase transactions. Additional conditions or exclusions may apply. Based on Quicken Loans data in comparison to public data records, equal housing lender, actually that's important, right? Licensed in all 50 states, NMLS, consumeraccess.org, number 3030. Here's what you need to remember. Simple enough. Rocketmortgage.com/techguy. Rocketmortgage.com/techguy. We thank Quicken Loans and Rocket Mortgage for their support of the Tech Guy podcast. And now, without further ado, on with the show. Leo Laporte, the tech guy, 8888 Ask Leo, the phone number, line 4, Diane in Chicagoland, Illinois. Hello, Diane.
Hi, Leo. How are you?
Couldn't be better, Diane. I've got a cup of coffee and a Slim Jim, and I'm ready to answer your call.
Okay. I just bought this cordless phone from Amazon. All I need is a cordless phone to go along with my Uma Vort, and I wanted to have a headset or be headset compatible so my hands are free so I can do things. The phone is laying down someplace. I just have the headset, I'll have it in my fanny pack as I walk around the house.
Right.
And so I wanted to have a headset so my hands are free.
Right.
And I bought a Uniden from Amazon in January, and the warranty is gone. Okay, the problem is I have the headset on. I can hear the caller, but the caller cannot hear me.
Oh, nuts.
I know this is not a computer problem.
That's all right.
Can you recommend I know this is not a computer problem, but can you recommend a good cordless phone that either I can use a Bluetooth or a headset jack so that my hands can be free?
Yeah. My favorite cordless phones are from Panasonic. Now, right. I should mention that probably what happened here, it used to work, right? And then it just stopped working at some point.
Yes.
Yeah. Probably what happened is that the microphone on the headset stopped working. They can still hear you when you're on the phone handset, right?
Yes.
Yeah. It's just, and these headsets are fragile, especially if you stick them in a fanny pack and, you know, you sit on them or whatever. They're a little fragile. What you could probably do to save money is get a replacement headset.
All right.
Because it's almost certainly just that little microphone, you know, on the little boom there, that little microphone. Those are very fragile, and it could easily get damaged. You have a pet, they could chew it. There's all sorts of things. So before I would go out and spend a couple of $100 on a brand new phone, I would just see if you can replace the headset on that. And who did you buy? Who made it, the phone you have?
Uniden, and they no longer make phones.
Oh, they got out of the business. I would still look on eBay for a replacement. It's probably a standard headset, but I don't know. And this one's a little tricky. If there only were still Radio Shacks, I would say take it to Radio Shack and see if you can get a replacement. Because that plug, it plugs into your phone, right? The headset?
Yeah.
It's got a little mini jack. It's probably got two or three rings on that little plug there. That is I would bet it's a standard. It may not be. It's conceivable Uniden said, no, we're going to make this weird, so you have to buy one from Uniden. But much more likely, that's a standard headset that you could get a replacement for. The problem is, there aren't radio. If you went down to Radio Shack and you said, can you replace this? They would say, oh, yeah, that's not a big deal. But I am guessing it is what we call, get ready for this, a 2.5-millimeter tip ring sleeve jack, or TRS jack. That is that's that three-ring mini jack that plugs into the phone. And if that's the case, you can easily replace just the headset. And I bet you it's the microphone that broke. You put a new headset in, everything will work fine. It'll save you a little money.
All right. And I have seen headset jacks at Target.
Target might have them, yeah. Nobody has filled in for Radio Shack, I'm sorry to say. I wish, because we need a consumer electronics store where you can go down and get things like this. But Target might. Yeah. So, and maybe if you find a nice, smart person at Target, you know, you go to the electronics area there, yeah, they're not too bad at Target. You go down there, bring your old headset, and say, look, this doesn't seem to work anymore. Do you have anything that could replace this? I bet you they could replace it. And it would only be $20 instead of $50 or $150. If you really want a new one, I like the Panasonic cordless. They have link to cell as well, which means it'll work with your cell phone as well as your regular UMA line. That's kind of handy, too.
And just for your information, AT&T has phones that have smart call blocker. So you have to announce who you are first.
I love that. Don't you love that?
Yes. And that prevents those callers.
Take a look. I'm looking. Panasonic makes a headset replacement for its own phones. I'm seeing it on Amazon for $17.81. I bet you this would work with your Uniden. I bet you anything. But
right.
I can't promise.
Can you give me the
if you look on Amazon for the KX TCA430.
TCA430.
Just look on Amazon and then look at they have a picture close up of the jack that goes into the phone. Look and see if it matches.
All right.
If it does, you know what? You're probably good to go.
Okay. I want you to stay on forever.
I want to stay on forever, too. So write to God and tell him not to take me too soon, will you?
I certainly shall. You're much better than that Kim lady.
Oh, don't say that. Kim's vicious. She'll come after me. I don't know, Diane. I don't know her. So next time you go to church, you ask, you say a special prayer to keep the tech guy on the air, will you?
Yes, I shall.
You sound like you might be a churchgoer.
I am, and I'm the lady that is in love with the Note 3.
I know who you are, Diane. You know I know who you are.
Right.
I love you, Diane.
I understand that the Note 10 is going to be better than the Note 9.
Yeah. Well, that's always true, isn't it? They have. Yeah. I'll tell you when we come back. Leo Laporte, the tech guy. Oh, my. Diane is so great. I love it whenever she calls. He's been everywhere, man. He's spread the mountain air, man. He's Johnny Jetta, traveling guru. And he joins us every week to help us travel better with technology. Hello, Johnny.
Hello, Leo. You show me your backpack? Is that
I was showing
one,
you
or?
my Tumi travel backpack. We're getting ready. Got a trip coming up. And you know what that means. All new clothes and all new luggage.
Is it slash proof?
Should it be slash proof?
Some of them. So listen, when you're going through, like, Las Ramblas is notorious for pickpockets.
In Barcelona, that's the big stroll in Barcelona. Yeah.
So my tip for you is when you're wearing that backpack, wear it on the front.
Like a baby.
You might look like a fool, but your belongings will be safe.
Okay. I wouldn't even dream of wearing a backpack out there. No. I don't want to do that. I've seen plenty of videos of backpacks being snaked out from under chairs and tables and all over the place. Yeah.
Actually, a great guess for you would be one of my buddies, Kevin Coffey. It was LAPD detective. He's spoken around the world. He's been on Oprah like four times teaching him travel safety and how to avoid pickpockets and things like that. And I think he would be a great guest.
Can I say something incredibly imprudent?
Yes.
I have, as you know, traveled widely, not as widely as you, but I've been to, I think, more than 100 countries. I've traveled all over the world. I have never yet, knocking firmly on my wooden desk, never yet been robbed in any way. Ever. I know plenty of people who have. Partly it's because I wouldn't carry a backpack around town. I have a travel jacket with lots of hidden inner pockets. So hidden that sometimes I lose stuff in it. I keep my stuff in there. Now, what about your passport? Do you carry it around?
I do not. I usually lock that up in the safe. It all depends on the country. But I've never been robbed either, knock on wood. But I've been with people who have, and a lot of times they're in places that you would not expect, including on Palm Sunday. I was touring a church in Germany, and someone in our tour group said, "Oh, my God, my wallet's gone." Oh, so while we're in the church.
In a church of all places.
Exactly. So you just can.
Only the ministers are allowed to rob you in the church.
Oh, my God.
I almost said priests, and I stopped myself.
Yeah. Well, you just asked the last caller to pray for you. So
yeah. Now it's pray doubly, Diana.
Now you really need it.
Pray doubly.
Big time.
This is a cause for concern, and I think it's on the upswing, isn't it?
I mean, it is. I mean,
that's the issue. Is I haven't been robbed, but most of my travels are in the distant past, so I should be careful because I haven't been to Barcelona in 10, 15 years. It's probably more dangerous now, right?
No, not necessarily. It's not dangerous. You just have to be worried about the pickpockets.
Yeah.
And it's everywhere. And also, I have been scammed before. So one time I was in Budapest with a couple of my buddies from high school, and we were walking around. He was about to get married the next day, and two pretty girls came up to us and said, "Hey, you want to get a drink?" I'm like, "No, I'm tired." My buddy's like, "Let's go." So we went to this bar.
Okay, this is the first thing to remember. No pretty girl wants to have a drink with you guys.
No kidding. But it seemed legitimate because
we're good-looking young fellas.
Yeah, they're like, "Where do you want to go?" We're like, "We have no idea." They're like, "How about let's just go to this one right here?"
Yeah, so right here. Yeah.
They're in there.
Yeah.
They get around drinks.
Yeah.
Anyway, the bill comes. It's 10 times more than it's supposed to be. And they're like, "Oh, my God, I can't believe it."
How dare they?
But they offered money. They put in money, And then afterwards, my buddy's like, they're in on the scam. I'm like, there's no way. So the next day, my buddy's like, we're camping out in front of this place. Sure enough, they come in with two more guys.
Of course they do. Yeah.
And so there's little scams like that. But a good tip, by the way, is to read the United States State Department travel section. So Google State Department and whatever country you're going to, travel information, because it actually had that scam listed.
No kidding.
And even said which bars do it. And
no
it was
kidding.
That one bar, Galaxy Bar, which I'll never forget, I think is now closed down finally. But, and actually, even a better tip is not only do you read the United States State Department's, you read Canada's, you read Australia's, and the UK's.
I subscribe to those UK travel bulletins you told us about some time back. I get those in my email all the time. But that's more like, don't go there because there's a civil war going on.
Right. Or there's a terrorist attack. They let you know within minutes.
Yeah. Yeah.
To stay away from that area. By the way, do you get them anymore? I've actually just realized I haven't seen them in a long time.
Look in your spam folder.
Yeah. I have to go double check or resubscribe.
You might have to resubscribe. Sometimes you have to resubscribe.
Great websites to find information on the scams that are taking place and what places to avoid.
I did get, I have to be honest. If you include scams, I got scammed in New Orleans. But I kind of went along with it. That's the guy who comes up. He said, will you give me $20 if I could tell you where you got them shoes? And I said, sure. He said, you got them on your feet.
Yeah, that's an old one.
I gave him the $20. He gave me a nice little shoe shine after that.
Yeah.
I don't think that was a scam. I got a shoe shine.
That's true.
That was like an honest scammer.
Yeah. Well,
I couldn't help but laugh, right? It was so funny. Lisa said, don't give him any money. I said, oh, come on. I said I would. I'm a man of my word.
Well, this is a long time ago, but one of my friends was in New Orleans, and he gave a street performer some money, and he got arrested for giving them money. And I don't know if that's still the law or what was going on, but...
Where was that?
In New Orleans.
I always give people money.
Yeah, well, I'm not saying don't do it or it's against the law, but one of my buddies did about a decade ago, and I never forgot that.
Wow.
Just refresh my memory.
Wow. That's... check your local ordinances, kids.
Yes.
I love to, especially if they're playing good music, and I'm thinking, this is great. I appreciate this. I'll often put money in the hat.
For
I like
sure.
that. That adds flavor to your trip.
It sure does. So I got, in addition to the websites I just mentioned,
by the way,
somebody
just said, after I told the shoe shine story, he said, and that man went on to become our president. All right. Shouldn't
You're
laugh,
really
but that was funny. All right. Yes. Go ahead, please.
Okay.
Okay.
So you have my websites. Now here's my app. Have you heard of this one? It's called PayTolo. PayTolo.
I don't want to pay Tolo. What is Tolo?
It actually has
Who is Tolo and why does he want my money?
They're the pay tolls. There's a lot of negative comments in there and it only has like 2 stars, but one of my friends used it, or one of a blogger I found.
Oh, this is an app for toll roads.
Yes. Right now it's only in Orange County and in South Florida.
Okay.
But it's a great alternative if it works properly. And you can get it on both Android and iOS. So what you do is just fill in your profile. It takes literally a minute. And then you take a picture of your license plate. And if you're renting a car, it's very important that you make sure that you delete that information after you drop the car off. Otherwise, you'll be getting charged for the person who rents it after you.
Oh,
every toll they go.
That's not good.
Right. Also, if you're renting a car, you got to make sure that you don't use the rental car's toll tags.
I usually do. Oh, because they charge you extra for the service.
Then you'll be getting charged double.
Yeah. Yeah.
And so, and you use Silver Cars, right? Which the one that's the best one.
I love Silver Car. Yeah.
The other ones like Avis and stuff, you know, they charge you $3 a day just to use it, regardless if you're going through.
Oh, I always get the fast track when they offer it in my rental car. So I shouldn't?
No, it all depends
on your choice,
on how many
right?
Yeah. I use it and. Actually, I did it with Avis recently, and they were fair about it. They made sure to alert everyone. There was a piece of paper on my seat.
Oh, good.
And it just says, you know, you'll be charged $3 a day up to, I think, $18 or $21.
That's not much for the convenience, I think. Johnny Jett, he's at johnnyjett.com. Lots of great travel information. Subscribe to his free travel newsletters. And of course, don't forget to follow him on Twitter and Instagram for lots more great stuff. Thank you, Johnny. See you next week. Leo Laporte, the tech guy. Leo Laporte, the tech guy. 8888 Ask Leo, the phone number. Dale in Palmdale is next. Hi, Dale.
How you doing, Leo?
I'm well. How are you?
Doing good. Just want to first say that I've been watching you. First, you turned me on to your YouTube, so I watch you through my YouTube.
Okay.
I'm watching you through my 65-inch LG.
Oh, gosh. I should have put on makeup.
Yeah, Johnny Jett needs to update his camera to a better quality.
I agree. He's a little blurry. But it is a radio show. Let's not forget.
Yeah, I know. I know.
But thank you for watching. Yeah, we stream everything. Maybe this was a crazy idea. I started doing this about 10 years ago. We stream everything, including the radio show, all the podcasts at twit.tv/live. There's a YouTube live feed, Twitch feed. There are a bunch of feeds, but twit.tv/live, you can watch live. And it's fun. And you get a different, if you watch live, you get a different show because we edit out all the bad stuff before.
Right.
Yeah. But you get all the bad stuff because we can't edit them out.
Speaking of which, I went to one of your shows to look at the one that you interviewed the guy from from Apple, and my brother is a big Apple fan, and I called him up. I said, "You got to come over. We got to watch this interview."
Oh, nice!
And it was with the gentleman with the beard,
Sal Segoyan.
Yeah,
many years at Apple, in charge of Apple Script over there. Yeah,
excellent, excellent interview.
Thank you.
The thing that I missed was all of the stuff that was afterwards when he was talking about all of his special little things that when he was talking to Steve Jobs.
Fear not, it was so good. We made a second show. So there are two. You got to watch the second one.
Yeah, he wants. Yeah, I sit there and I go, you would not believe the things that the Apple can do, Steve. This.
He was. Sal was doing something. He said, "Oh, this has been an Apple for 13 years. They just never told anybody." He was working in a keynote presentation with his voice as well as his mouse and keyboard, and he would say things like, "Okay, take that picture, make a panorama," like he had an assistant, and it would just do it.
I saw that, and I was sitting there telling my brother, "You got to see this! You got to see this!" And then when it came to the end of the show, that was all cut out, and I go, "Oh my God!
No!
I need you to see isn't there?
It's in part two. So go back to twit.tv/TRI. That's the show Triangulation TRI, and just watch the Sal Segoyan part two. I think we put that out yesterday.
Oh my God, that's great! But and actually, I'm an Android person, and I'm going, I think I'm going to be an Apple person.
Wow.
that's how much it impressed me. I'm just sitting here going, this is what I've always dreamed that computers can do.
Yeah, automation is really interesting, and it's unfortunate that Apple, we didn't talk too much about this, but they fired Sal. They didn't fire him. His position was discontinued 2 years ago. Sal has found plenty to do since, and thank goodness, because he's a great guy. But it's strange, because this is probably one of the most amazing features of both iOS and Macintosh that Apple doesn't tout enough. Now they're pushing it in iOS with Siri and Siri Suggestions and the new Shortcuts app, which will be out probably next month with iOS 12. That will give you the same kind of capabilities on an iPhone, and that'll be very interesting, yeah.
And one other thing, the lady that called in about the telephone.
Yes.
And her
Diane
wants to do it hands free.
Yeah.
I'm not sure, but I thought she said she had an Echo Dot. And if that's the case, if the person that she's talking to has an Echo Dot, they can talk to each other through the Echo Dot. They don't even have to have a telephone.
Yeah, but
and it's hands free.
Everybody's started to do this. Amazon does it with its Echoes, Google does it with a Google Home. You can call numbers. Now, it's a speakerphone, so it's, you know, the sound is, if you're too distant from the device, is a little echoey, like you're in a big room. But other than that, right. It's pretty amazing. Yeah.
Yeah, and they have this thing called drop-in, which I like, but I don't like, because my son-in-law now drops in on me, and I don't even know it needs to.
I know. I turned it on for my mom, and I regretted it, but... It's kind of cool because you can just say drop in on Leo, and if you have one of the Echoes that has a camera built in, which is the Echo Show or the Echo Spot, I think it's called.
Yeah, thank God I don't have that.
Yeah, I do. I'm sitting right in front of one, and all of a sudden they appear and you appear. There's no ringing or anything. It just comes on because you're dropping in. It's like Fred and Ethel Mertz. You know, they would come over to see Ricky and Lucy unannounced. They'd crawl in the kitchen window, and there they'd be. And
yeah, exactly.
And it's just like that.
Yeah,
you have to be and you have to be very close to the people you let drop in. You can control it, by the way. You can say who can and can't do it.
Oh, okay. And the other thing that I was watching is I was watching your show. I think it was the new Screensavers, and you had a gentleman on there in regards to the Augment TV, and that blew my mind.
Yeah.
But do you have to use that with an iPad?
God, that's a good question. I don't remember. Their theory is that you could do it with, I believe you can do it with an Android as well. The key really is not so much. So the idea was you point your tablet or your phone at the TV and special programming on the TV will come to life on your tablet or phone. It's augmented reality. And as I remember, it's really that you have to be using, it has to be the TV show, right? More than anything else. I think it works on Android and iOS. Android and iOS both have easy to use programming tools for augmented reality. Apple calls theirs AR Kit. Google calls the Android toolkit AR Core. But both do the same thing. And I don't remember with Augment. It's AUGMEN.TV. Yeah, it's both Android and iOS. I'm just looking at their website. Yeah, it's both Android and iOS. You can see a demo of what it would look like if you go to their website.
Yeah, and I tried it, and it works. And I'm sitting there going, whoa, this is great.
I know.
But it kind of does that stuff no matter what you're watching, and it's not necessarily linked to, like I put it on a basketball game just to see what would happen with a basketball game. And it was giving me information, but it wasn't giving me
You got the extra data. Oh, that's interesting. I didn't realize. I thought it had to have the cooperation of the broadcaster. But they may have set it up. It's NBC Universal and Comcast are big investors. I'm guessing that they maybe just take some broadcasts and enable it, you know, they're on their own. You know, just say, oh, well, we know you're watching the NBA and we happen to have enough data about the NBA to do that. So maybe that's what it is. That's interesting. Yeah. Wow, yeah, I haven't. So you tried it on a random basketball game and it worked.
Yeah. Yeah, it was weird. It was and it was giving me all different information because you know how that train that came out of the picture?
Yeah.
I'm just like going, whoa. And then there is, I'm just like blown away. And then the smoke going up past the TV, I'm going, now how did it do that?
You know, if you have an iPhone or an Android phone, you can go to their website, augmen.tv. You need to download the app, and then they have a demo. If you press the demo button, and you can try it, and you could see what all the different experiences would be like. It is pretty amazing. I agree with you.
Yeah. One, can I make a suggestion for you?
Yes.
As far as your show?
Yeah.
You were talking about it earlier as far as being transported. I would like to be able to be transported to your show. Now, I've figured out a way of doing this.
Wait. Oh, you mean you're talking about remote PC that you could log into my show?
No.
Okay.
No. Let's say that you take one of the, I don't care which brand name, but you take a 360-degree camera.
Okay.
And you set it right there where your guests are sitting.
Oh, I've done that, yeah.
And then basically, I can go on my VR, and instead of going to twit.tv, I would go to twit.tv 360.
Right.
So I would be actually linked into that camera, and I could look around your shop and see, and when Scott, and you don't even need cameras to, like when Scott's there, you don't need to pan over there, because I can just look over there.
Yes. So we have often thought about that. And we, my friend Alex Lindsay, who's one of our hosts on the Macintosh show we do, Mac Break Weekly, brought the, I think it's a $60,000 Nokia Ozo camera and shot one of our episodes of Mac Break Weekly with it. So you can go to YouTube and search for Mac Break Weekly in 360 degrees and see what it would look like. The only problem, now maybe this is getting better in time, but at the time was it took him about a week to take the video and render it. It was that difficult to do. But I'll put a link in the show notes to the YouTube video so you can at least see what it would look like. It's kind of wild.
Can you do a live feed?
You can't do it live. That's the problem right now, is at least to do it in the quality that we were doing it with the Nokia Ozo. Not only do you have to have a $60,000 camera, but it has to be rendered after the fact because everything's 360, including the audio, and that took him a week. to render. So you couldn't do it live. You have to watch the show a week later. And that's one of the reasons we don't do it yet. I think, though, in time, maybe even now, this was a couple of years ago, maybe they've got it now. I'll ask Alex. If they could do it live, I probably would do it. Then you could be in the studio audience, look around, pay attention to what you want to. It's a very interesting experience. I remember the presidential debates you could watch on your Gear VR. That was quite an experience. So I guess it is possible to do it live. Leo Laporte, the tech guy. And we got a great cast assembled.
This was the old studio.
Great Whitley, stalwarts, Andy,
but
and
you
Notko
could see
from the Chicago
what it looks
Sun
like.
Times.
It's like you're sitting
the
right there. That's
view.
Actually,
I mean, that
where
shot
the Ozo is.
Excellent now, Andy. You've just stepped up your game. Big time.
What you can't do is like
sound like I know
go under the
about.
Table.
I look like
you can't move.
You look better than me, which is not.
I think it's a gimmick.
Happy about.
I think it's a gimmick. I think it's one of those things where.
And Alex Lindsay, man,
you know. But if you were wearing a headset like the Gear VR or the Oculus Go, and watching this YouTube stream, you could sit there as if you're watching the show.
If you were in Rwanda, could I be?
And then look around. I wonder what's going on outside the window right now
to make that work. Also from is it Winnipeg?
Yeah.
This time it looks like
yeah.
The issue is doing it live in real time.
This is very high quality because but you know I think that you can do it live
visitor
now.
For episode 500 a visitor from the east the far east from Finland we have an Ozo on the set.
Yeah, it's you know we're looking at the next 500 episodes and this might be hopefully part of it. This is a this is the new Nokia
notice
Ozo.
Only 22
right
minutes
now.
Of the show are on there
because
it took
him
a week
VR
just to render that.
Degree VR camera.
That's right.
That
but it's very high
I remember
quality.
Cost $60,000.
Yes,
it's still not as good.
And
by the way, Nokia discontinued it.
It's well, we already figured out. I think it's what is it? 150 Alexes, but
I think it's only 85 Alexes. I think it's not quite 150 Alexes.
Well, hey, how are you today? Leo Laporte here. It's Tech Guy time. Yes, that nerd on the radio. That's me. Hi. this is the show where we talk about computers, the internet, home theater, digital photography. We talk about smartphones, smartwatches. 8888, ask Leo the number. If you have a question, a suggestion, you want some help, a little, as I used to say when I first started doing this, 27 years ago, a hand holding on the information superhighway. Yeah. Nobody's asked for any hand holding on the information superhighway in a while. Line 3, Tom, Warren, Ohio. Hey, Tom.
Hey, Leo. How are you doing?
I'm well. How are things in Warren?
Hey, it's 81 degrees and sunshine. We had a little rain this morning.
Nice. The Warren Weather Report, brought to you by Tom.
Yes, from Northeast Warren, Ohio. Okay. Hey, I had a question about some business cards. You know, when I go to the hospital, they say, can we have your medical card and your driver's license?
Yeah.
Through a little scanner. I didn't know if there's some type of app that if you could digitize your business card and send it out somewhat easier.
Oh, absolutely.
Transfer it via Bluetooth.
Oh, absolutely. Yeah, there are lots of ways to do this. iPhone or Android?
iPhone.
Okay. So there's a couple of things you can do. Certainly, there are a number of programs that will scan anything and convert it into editable text. In your case, there's a standard called VCF. Which is the standard for business cards, VCF. Mm-hmm. So if somebody can handle VCF format, is it VCF? I think it is. Now I'm doubting myself. Maybe it's VFC. Mm-hmm. If somebody can handle the format, then you would want to send it to them in that format. Yeah, okay. It's pretty sure it's VCF. I'm just looking it up.
I did PDFs in that, and I used a lot of stuff in my iBooks.
Well, for instance, if you have, you can go to your contact list on your iPhone and you can choose your contact, which is, of course, everything about you. You can save it out as you can export it as a VCF. You can save it out as a VCF. There's also at the bottom of your thing a share card that will show you a variety of different ways to share it. But if you share it to messages, for instance, it'll do a funny thing. In fact, you could try it right now if you go into your iPhone and go to contacts and then share your card. It'll make not all the information. It makes a little blue box with your name and company in it. That is a VCF file. And somebody who's receiving that on an iPhone or an Android phone, because this is a standard, somebody's receiving that on an iPhone or an Android phone, will click it, and it will import into their contact list. And because it's in the contact app, you'll note there's notes, so you can put medical information there if you want. You can even add arbitrary fields to notes. The other thing I use all the time on the iPhone, and I really like it, is something called Full Contact. Now, this is not free, but this is for the opposite direction. When somebody gives me a business card, I take a picture of it with Full Contact, and it interprets it. And the way it does that, it actually sends it to humans. You know, I've seen in the past business card scanning software, not great. Not great. Because it's automated, right? And if business cards, the font tends to be tiny. It's a little harder for it to do that job. But this one uses humans. That's why you have to pay a yearly subscription fee for it. And it's perfect. And what it stores in your contact list is both a picture of the card and then the human translation of it, so it's searchable. So I really like that. So that's the other direction. That's if you meet somebody. People give me business cards all the time. If you meet somebody, you can use Full Contact to take a picture of the business card and throw it away. Or give it. What I do is I give it back to them. Yeah. Business cards are expensive. I say, oh, great. Let me just take a shot of that. Here, take it back. And then that automatically puts it in. So both things. You can go out by the built-in contacts app. I believe that the Google one will do the same thing. It'll take the contact, turn it into a VCF file, and then push it out to wherever you want.
Okay, I'll check that out. VCF format.
Yeah. I hope I'm getting that right. I'm searching for it, and now I can't. It doesn't seem to. Let me see. Business card format. I'm pretty sure it's VCF. I hate to doubt myself like that, but there is a standard for this. And any contact manager should export into VCF format.
Okay. Sounds good.
Now, here's another suggestion. I love this. Somebody in the chat room, Onadich, which sounds like German, says create a QR code. And that's an interesting thing, too. QR codes can contain any arbitrary text. If it's a lot of it, the QR gets bigger.
Yeah,
but it's still something somebody could point a phone at, and then V card. I guess VCF is really V card. That's probably what you should search for. So there is software that can take V card and turn it into a QR code. That's another way to do it. There used to be people put QR codes on their back of their business cards, but anything that can generate QR codes could take your business card info and turn it into a QR code. And then it's a little complicated because then you have to say, oh, here's my business card on my phone. Scan that and you'll have it. I like the idea of just sending the V card myself. Okay?
Okay.
Does that answer your question?
Good. Yeah, very good.
Okay. V card is also known as a VCF or virtual contact file. I was right. The memory hasn't failed completely. Thanks for the question. I think this is a good thing for people to know. It's a data interchange format. You mentioned PDF, same idea. Portable document format, PDF. The idea is it's a format that anybody can read. VCard or VCF, same idea. If you have a contact manager, it should, any decent contact manager, understand a VCard or VCF format and import it, put everything in the right fields and everything like that. So a lot of times you can even send, this is kind of interesting, you could have your email signature include a V card. If you're in sales, for instance, and you want people to be able to reach you, and you want somebody in sales to have your information, just create a V card from your contact manager, save it as a file, you know, mycontactinfo.vcf, and then have it be part of your email signature. That's another nice way to share that information in a way that's standard for all. Leo Laporte, the tech guy, more calls right after this. Leo Laporte, the tech guy, 8888. Ask Leo. You know what's great? Of course, we're going to miss Aretha Franklin, passed away this week at the age of 76. But thanks to the miracle of recording technology, right? We've got her. We've got her forever. And you know her music's going to live forever. Isn't that great? We live in great times, amazing times. Just think. Now, of course, I also think about the fact that every time, and I mentioned this last week, I go to a concert or a show or anything is going on, I see everybody recording it on their smartphones. I think this, we've got to be the most recorded easily the most recorded period of time ever in the history of the world. I think somebody said that more photos were taken last year than in the entire history of humankind. And it's only going up and up and up. Last year, 1.2 trillion photos were taken in 2017. That's according to InfoTrends. 1.2 trillion photos. That's 100 billion more than they did the year before. And I bet you this year, it'll be another 100 billion more. Nobody's buying digital cameras, though. That's the interesting thing. The sales of digital cameras has dropped dramatically. In 2010, 121 million digital cameras were sold. You want to guess how many were sold in 2016? About a tenth that. Wow. Because you don't need a digital camera anymore. You got your camera phone. It does a pretty good job. That's why we got 1.2 trillion digital photos. But I have to wonder, who's going to be looking at these photos? What happens to all those videos people shot at the concert? Instead of enjoying the concert, I bet they never even look at the video again. Maybe they show it to a few friends that week, and then it's gone. You know, I mean, it's stored forever, but it's never watched again. If you're a historian 100 years from now, if you're a historian, man, you're not going to have any trouble finding a historical record of everything that happened moment to moment. 8888 Ask Leo. John, Montgomery, Alabama. Hello, John. Leo Laporte, the tech guy.
Hey, Leo. How are you?
I'm well. How are you?
I'm doing well. Hey, got a question for you. I'm a fireman by trade, but I run the internet at our both our fire stations.
Awesome.
And I set up the got the modem, set up the access point. Did a lot of the research myself, watching YouTube videos of 12-year-olds telling me how to do networking.
That was great. Well, you know, if you need help with networking, nobody better than a 12-year-old.
Yeah. But so anyways, it's been running great. We use the Unify APLRs, Ubiquiti.
Very fancy. Oh, you're doing the big stuff. That's actually a great idea.
I wanted to go do it right so I could monitor it because not everybody pays. And I had other access points, and I could only put up to 100 MAC addresses. But nowadays, everybody's got a tablet.
So you ask the the guys in the firehouse to chip in. And then once they chip in, you say, okay, your MAC address is allowed.
Yes.
Great.
So that way I can monitor everything. But we've gotten more people on there, so it kind of slowed, you know, was going slower. So we upped our internet speed from 100 to 300 megabytes.
Wow. How many firefighters use it at once?
On a daily basis, I'd say around 15 to 20.
But if they're all watching Netflix, I could see why you'd need 300 megabits. I bet you that's what a lot of it is, right? Streaming TV.
Netflix, streaming TV, PlayStations, Xboxes, you know, those young guys come in. So the access points we have, they say on the back of them that they support data speeds from 6 megabytes to 300.
Right.
But when we bumped up to 300, the most I can get is 80.
That's not good.
And you can't call Ubiquiti. That's the only thing I don't like about Ubiquiti is they have no phone number you can call and talk to them. Everything's over chat.
Yeah.
And whenever, you know, I chat with them, they basically said that you're not getting even close to 300 megabytes, that 80 is good enough.
80 is not good enough, but they're right about that. Typically, Wi-Fi is about 60% of the nominal rate. So if you had 300 megabytes, you'd expect maybe 180. But 80, that's a lot lower.
And, well, they said that because they're 2.4 gigahertz, they're not the dual, they're not the 2.4.
Oh, there you go. There's your problem right there.
Okay. So that's the issue. So yeah. I need to switch to something that's dual.
You would want tri-band if you could get it.
Okay. Oh, I don't even know if they do tri-band, do they?
Maybe not. I'll have to say, while Ubiquiti is the king of the hill in enterprise networking and in solving problems like this, their consumer grade stuff is not my favorite stuff.
Right.
So that's what you have. I like Ubiquiti.
But, I mean, I'm not opposed to switching.
Yeah, you could either get their enterprise grade, which would be better, or I think what I would look at for pure speed is the Orbeez from Netgear, and I've mentioned these before. These are the fastest.
The mesh system?
Yeah, these are the fastest. Mesh is going to help you. I presume you have an upstairs and a downstairs, right? Is everybody upstairs or?
No. It's actually they're doing away with the upstairs and downstairs. I work on a military installation.
Ah,
military has done away with upstairs and downstairs for safety reasons.
They don't want people going down those poles anymore, right?
Exactly.
It's too much fun. I understand. Yeah, a lot of broken ankles. I imagine. Yeah.
Yeah.
So it's all one floor.
It's all one floor.
But it's military, which means it may be that it's pretty well built. It might even be, you know, concrete or stone.
There's concrete.
Yeah. Concrete with rebar is death to Wi-Fi because the metal, not the concrete, right, but the metal. Anything with metal in it's going to Wi-Fi bounces off of. Now, this can be an advantage for you, too, because the 5 gigahertz, so you have 2.4. The lower the number, the better it goes through walls. It's all microwave.
Right.
But 5 is even higher microwave and really will bounce off walls. That's not necessarily a bad thing because it reduces congestion. So I would, yeah, for you, I would look at an Orbeez with, you get one extra unit for every 1,500 square feet you want to cover.
Uh-huh.
The Orbeez will certainly give you better throughput.
Okay. What about at my home, I have the Amplify HD.
Yeah, I'm not, I'll be honest with you, I'm not a big fan of the Amplifies. I tried them.
Really?
I didn't get the best speed out of them. I would look at, for you, the Orbeez Pro, which is a little more expensive. Are you subsidizing this with the firefighters, or are you getting a little help from the government?
Well, no, we're subsidizing with the firefighters.
Okay.
We chose to do that based on if budget cuts come, the first thing
right.
is going
to
be,
hey, the Wi-Fi is the first thing to go. I would look at the Orbeez Pro. You'll get the most throughput, the best results out of that, in my opinion. I have to take a break. Hang on, though. I'll talk to you off the air. Speed. If speed is of the essence, the Amplify probably not the best choice. Leo Laporte, the tech guy. You know, it's funny because Ubiquiti really is the king of the hill in this stuff, but only in the enterprise grade stuff. I was very disappointed with their consumer stuff.
Well, I love their controllers, the way that I'm able to do. I use the cloud keys, so whether I'm in Florida or Las Vegas or wherever I'm at, I can see if somebody authorized online is not allowed to be there, and I can block them.
Any mesh system will probably allow you to do much of that. The Orbeez is very much like a regular router in that regard. It's much less like an Eero or a Plume where you have to only use the app. They have a web interface and all of that. But I would read more about it to make sure it'll do all the things you want it to do. It is, of all the mesh routers, easily gets the highest throughput.
Does it?
Yeah.
Okay.
300 is tough. Remember, the other thing about mesh is it's not designed to give you the fastest speed. It's designed to give you the most consistent to all the users.
Correct. Which is fine. I mean, if we're paying for 300, I mean, I'm happy with 180. I'm happy with
Even if you're getting 80, if you get 80 to 5 different units,
yeah,
then you're getting 300. We got getting 400, actually. So remember that the meshes are designed to say, well, look, that guy's PlayStation. He doesn't need as much speed. He needs low latency. That guy's watching HD on Netflix. He needs more speed. Latency's not and it will in theory, anyway, these will optimize for the kinds of devices and the kinds of uses. And so,
nice.
Yeah. So really, a speed test isn't actually a very good way to measure a mesh network's performance. You really want to see if all 15 guys is working for, then okay. But remember, 15 guys all watching, 50 megabit sources, and Netflix will be say 25 megabits. You're gonna tap out easily. Even with 300.
One more thing. When you were talking to Johnny Jett, and he was talking about being in Hungary and getting done by those girls about the bar.
Yeah.
That's one. I lived in Hungary for a little while, and that was a known fact that when you went to the bars,
the B-girls,
you paid as you went.
Right.
So if you ordered drinks, you paid right then. You didn't run a tab, because the biggest thing, you'd run a tab. They bring you a bill for like
That's a great tip. Don't run a I bet you anywhere that's a good tip. Don't run a tab.
Exactly.
And if you're in the service, you're a mark. You know, they get these young service guys in. They go, we're gonna take advantage of them, right?
Well, they would have these mafia guys that would escort these guys to the ATM to withdraw the money.
Oh, Lord. That's so awful. Yeah. Oh, man.
Yeah. So, yeah.
Did you live in Budapest?
Never run a tab. I lived in Kaposvár, which is about 45 minutes to an hour away from Budapest. But we went up there quite a bit.
I love Budapest.
Lake Balaton.
Oh, yeah. Was it a good posting for you? Did you like it?
I loved it. Had they not, I was contract over there. I wasn't military at the time. I was contract. Had they not closed the contract down, I'd probably still be over there.
Yeah.
Well, but I stayed in Kosovo, Ecuador, Hungary, Pakistan, Afghanistan, Iraq.
Oh, you've seen the world, my friend. So, how fun!
Oh yeah.
And you're in the service now. You're not contract anymore.
No. I'm civilian.
You're federal fire or
firefighter with federal fire with the military.
Got it. Well, thank you for your service.
So,
I tell you, I always I think so highly of firefighters because you guys run towards danger while we're all running away. It just blows me away. Just blows me away. I appreciate it.
All right. Well, thank you for the input.
Take a look at the neck of your Orbeez for your house too. These are great.
I don't think I could sell my wife on the Netgear Orbeez.
We just bought these amplifiers. What are you talking about? Hey, nice to talk to you.
All right, take care.
Have a good one. Take care.
All right, bye.
First Lady Soul, Aretha Franklin. Leo Laporte, the tech guy. 8888 Ask Leo. Yeah, these new Orbeez Pros are interesting. I haven't played with these. I think I'll have to order some and take a look. But they say their max speed... 3,000 megabits. 3 gigabits. So that's a lot of speed. But again, it's not always the speed that you're looking for with a mesh system. Sometimes it's just performance, right? And everybody, you know, a mesh system is about fairness. It's about everybody getting an equitable amount of bandwidth, and whoever's getting the bandwidth they need gets the bandwidth they need. So sometimes speed tests don't do justice, in my opinion, don't do justice to the mesh systems. They always are slower than they ought to be. Leo Laporte, the tech guy. We go back to the phones, line 2 in Hackensack, New Jersey. It's Robert. Hello, Robert.
Hi, Leo. How are you?
I'm great. How are you?
And thank you for taking my call.
My great pleasure. What can I do for you?
I'm having problems with UWA apps.
UWA apps. Okay.
Yeah, I'm not getting internet connection. I get connections with all my non-window apps, my third-party apps, but...
When you say UWA...
I'm talking about Windows Store.
Okay, I just want to make sure. That's Windows Store apps.
Yeah.
Other apps on your Windows machine work fine?
Yes. No problems.
But the UWA apps, the Windows Store apps, they're not going on online at all?
Right. And it seems to be a common problem going back to when Windows 10 and even Windows 8 came out.
That's the craziest thing I ever heard of. Tell me about your network. Is it Wi-Fi? Is it wired?
It's wired. I have a mixer of Wi-Fi and wired.
And I have no. It baffles me. I wonder if the UWA stands for Universal. What is it? Windows app, I guess. Universal Windows app. And what it really is Microsoft's ham-fisted attempt to get people to develop for the Windows phone back when it didn't exist, as well as Windows 10. But thanks to Windows S, which is the new version of Windows, which requires you use store apps, the store is going to be around for a while. UWA is not going away. Now, when you use UW, UWP apps? Do you have problems with those two, or just UWA? Are you
just UWA? And I have been researching this for the longest. With this machine, it's on Windows Insider build, and it just recently started. I do have a backup of this machine that I can go back to if need be, but this is strange.
It's funny. I'm looking at a Scooter X in our chat room sent me a tech note from answers.microsoft.com. Which I think is your problem. This goes back 3 years to 2015. Windows 10 apps can't access the internet, but desktop apps can, right?
Exactly.
Similar, anyway. And Microsoft seemed to have no help. In fact, one guy says, I'm having this issue, too. Microsoft support took remote control of my laptop. They couldn't solve it. I see a lot of people.
With me, too.
Same exact problem. Oh, you've had Microsoft work on that.
Yep. I've had Microsoft. This is a an Aurora from Dell, and I even had them work on it.
All right, so there's a couple of things. I'm looking at this. There's a couple of things they suggest that I'm going to try with you. You're not using a proxy of any kind, right?
No.
So go to settings.
And at first, I thought it was my VPN, but it's not that either.
Because you disable a VPN, it still doesn't work.
Right.
The VPN is a proxy, by the way.
Yeah.
So this may break the VPN, but I would try it. I think you just nailed it, by the way. I think I now understand what's going on. So in the net,
I have 10 machines, and I don't have this problem with any of the other machines. And there are
well, it's a settings issue. Go to your network settings, and disable automatically detect proxy settings. Right.
Yep.
You've already done that.
Yep. And I disabled IPv6.
Okay. Yeah, these are all things that people have tried.
Yeah, I've done most of them.
Boy, you've even talked to Microsoft, and they had no solution for you.
Nope.
So, I'm not sure what it is. You know, one would assume that UWP apps and UWA apps would still use the same network stack, the same TCP stack, as desktop apps. So I can't think of anything. You've tried different DNS servers. You've tried, I don't know.
And see, what's strange, it's only specific to the Microsoft apps.
Yeah. Oh, that's interesting. So it's not other store apps, just Microsoft's store apps.
Yeah. You know what? I haven't tried other store apps. Oh, yes, I have. It was a game. And
it didn't work either?
Connect. Yeah. Okay.
You got me. I'm looking. The chat room has provided me with two different threads, one from technet.microsoft.com and one from answers.microsoft.com, and you've, I think, looked at them because it sounds like you've tried the solutions recommended there. But I see some people saying these help and some say they don't help. It's got to be, do you have any security software installed on that machine?
Just Windows Defender.
Not any third party?
No. Following you.
Right. And by the way, I should ask you that right up front, because that is the most common reason for not getting on the internet. But what's weird is you are getting on. You can use the browser and it works fine.
Yeah, I can't use Edge, but I use Chrome mainly. And
here's another wild one, a program called Microsoft Forefront installed, do you?
No.
Okay.
That was another thing.
You've seen these threads then. You know, these are, there's some weird threads. And I do see things like, wow, this worked for me, but it's all different things.
Exactly.
I can't help you except to say, if anybody listening knows the answer, call me quick. That is bizarre. I've never heard of this. You might try just resetting the PC and in the Windows recovery options. Leo Laporte, the tech guy. Aha! Did you try this one, creating a new account?
Yep.
And it's still in the new account and have the same problem.
Yep.
Yeah. I always keep an unused account on both Windows and Mac machines. Well, you listen to this show, don't you?
Yeah. I mean, I've been in the business for over 40 years, so I've seen a lot.
Yeah. And that always is a good diagnostic, because if it's local to a profile, then you could say, well, I'm doing something in that profile. But no. Wow, here's one. There's a this one, I've got to figure this one out. I have to think this is the VPN doing something. Which VPN are you using?
I've even removed the VPN and installed it.
Right, but you used a client. There was some VPN software on there, right?
Yeah.
Is that on other machines that are not having problems?
Yeah.
Okay.
I mean, I even have it on my Mac and no problem there.
Well, yeah, but that, you know, the Mac, the network stack's completely different, so.
Mm-hmm.
Wow, this worked for me, but it's very strange. Disabling this parameter enables Windows 10 app connectivity and vice versa. This should be fixed. Windows Edge open built-in administrator account. This is so I'm going to put these two threads in the show notes. You can go through them. But Windows 10 Edge can't be opened using the Bridge True app. Navigate local policy. Oh, you don't have. But see, you don't have. Or maybe you do. You're not using GP Edit or setting policies, are you?
I mean, I have done that in the past. Yeah. But no, not on this machine.
User account control admin approval mode for the built-in administrator account. It seems there are some security policies in SecPol that could cause this weird thing where UWP apps or UWA apps don't work, but desktop apps do. It's a user account issue. So you might want to look at what settings you've got for UAC, what level you're at in UAC.
I'm at medium level.
Yeah, maybe try going to the least secure. I can't remember what that's called.
Yeah, I know what you're talking about.
Never notify, something like that. Mm-hmm. I'm gonna also put this link. I think somebody already did in the chat room. This is from Virtualization How To, that has some interesting stuff. Boy, that is a odd problem, isn't it?
Yeah, I mean, like I said, I've been in the business 40 years.
Yeah, you know what you're talking about. I can tell. Yeah. Strangest thing ever. But it is something. It is some interaction. I'm almost certain it's the VPN, but who knows?
But you see, the thing about it, I have that same brand of VPN on my Mac, using the Mac version, using the Windows version. You know, on VMware in Mac, I have it on another computer. Even on an Asus
I don't know. Keep listening. Maybe somebody report a solution. You're not running insider builds, right? Are you running the stock Windows?
No, this one is an insider.
Ah, interesting. That could be it too. Well, thank goodness Michael Cozio played some disco music, or I might not have noticed Dick DiBartolo sneaking up behind me. Hello, Dickie D.
Hey, how you doing, Leo?
These are the good times.
Yeah, these are, yeah.
When did that song come out? I wonder if those really were the good times.
Boy.
Because at some point, the good times escaped us.
Yeah.
they just went away, you know?
Exactly.
So that's
exactly.
Chic. And I think it came out, 1979. Little did we know Those were the good times.
Yeah, I know. I know. Well, thank God I didn't leave them. You did.
You're still wearing still the satin pants and the
exactly. Well, I'm up to looking at my calendar. I'm up to 1982.
Yeah, it's still good times. Yeah. I think.
Yeah, it's still good times.
Who knew? Sheik was right. These are those. Now we have to say those were the good times.
Yeah.
Dickie D is Mad's maddest writer. For the last five decades, if you read Mad Magazine, you're reading his parodies, his jokes. He is the greatest ever. He also took all the money he made from Mad and sunk it into gizmos that barely work. Okay?
Yes.
But this is the good side of that. You're now known as the Gizwiz, the Gizmo Wizard.
That is correct. That is correct.
If somebody comes up with a new gizmo, they're going to give it to Dick.
Or I will buy it. as I did with, I don't know if you've seen these ads, Leo, but they range from, oh, that might work, to, are you kidding me? The one that, the reason I bought this is about 2 weeks ago, I got this ad saying, I'm just going to read it. Air conditioner, light, portable, super cool, quickly cools any room, bone chilling.
Bone chilling.
Bone chilling.
Bone chilling.
For under $90. Okay, so I took a
to be chilled to my bones.
Well, I did a web search and I found the same thing for $48, then for $40, and then for $28. I figured $28, I'm in.
I need that $28 bone chiller.
Yeah. Yes, exactly. Well, first of all, when you read the specs, even in the $90 version, it's a 6.5 by 6.5 inch cube that runs via USB power.
Is this by any chance the Arctic air cooler?
This is exactly.
As seen on TV.
As seen at Bed Bath & Beyond. I thought it was some jerky thing, and I went to Bed Bath & Beyond. They had stacks of them.
Well,
so
at that price, buy 10.
Yeah, exactly. So and you and I, Lou, we talked about this years ago with the mail order ripoff. It's a little device that you open the side and you pour water in.
Oh, it's a swamp cooler.
Exactly. It is a swamp cooler.
That's not bone chilling.
That is bone moisturizing.
Yes.
Because this is what happens. When you first turn it on, I go, you know, this is not a scam.
It cools.
This works.
It does cool. Yeah.
And then about 20 minutes later, I'm going, God, I'm getting so damp in here. And then I got my little weather station out. And so the temperature went down a degree and the humidity up went at 12 degrees. So then when you finally buy it and read the book, this is what it says in the book. You'll get the most benefit when you sit directly in front of the unit.
Yes.
No more than 3 feet away.
Right.
And it works best if you're in a dry area.
So wait a minute. Is it spraying you with water then blowing it off? Is that what it's doing?
No. It's just doing evaporative cooling.
Okay.
You fill with water. The water drips over these little pads and the fans behind it.
Yeah.
And I find it works great in front of my air conditioner. I put that in front of my air conditioner. It was
It cools the same way a dog's tongue cools, basically. That's how a dog's tongue works.
Oh, okay. Well, you know what? I should have told Charlie to cool me off. I got to save $30. It also runs 8 hours. It runs out of water after 3 hours, but it doesn't shut off. It's, you know, if you live in the desert and you have $30... this can probably be something for you, but otherwise, people on Amazon are pretty unhappy with it. if I spent $90 for this, I would be one unhappy camper. But for $28, it was a lot of laughs.
According to Wikipedia, the cooling potential for evaporative cooling is dependent on the wet bulb depression. How's your wet bulb depression?
You know what? Let me throw some water on this bulb, and I'll tell you.
I think this is a depressing product, but it is available for $40 at Walmart.
At Bed Bath & Beyond and all over the place. Yeah. And like I said,
seen on TV.
Yeah. I saw it for $25 on Amazon. So
probably somebody selling theirs. Only slightly used. I love the name Arctic Air. That really does sound bone chilling.
Yeah. Well, but I know. Bone chilling. you know, I also love, and there were, it's not a lie when they say, place it in any room.
It's true.
Yeah,
you literally can place it in any room. You now how much would you pay?
In a ballroom.
Sure. Yeah. Put it in your closet. Put it in a ballroom. It doesn't matter. Exactly. Take it in your car.
Exactly. You know, it was one of my favorite things for Mad that the editors liked most was to writing ads for this. And I said, here's a $5 pen. This pen can write a check for $10 million.
Now how much would you pay?
Yes, it can write in any language. Oh, my gosh. Well, I got to get that pen.
I just read a history of the ballpoint pen. That I really loved. I'm trying to find it.
Don't
so
spoil
I can...
the ending, because I'm going to see the movie.
No, okay. Okay. It was in Time. Was it in Time? I don't know. It was a really good. Oh, yeah. Maybe. No. Actually, apparently, there are quite a few histories of the ballpoint pen out there. But I recently read one. I feel like it was, I don't know, maybe it was on Tedium. Did you know that there's a site called Tedium?
It's a play on. Are you talking about the Gizwiz show?
It's a play on Medium. Tedium.com.
Oh, that's very good. Yeah. That's very funny.
The dull side of the internet.
That sucks.
Yeah, yeah. I just thought maybe that's where I saw it. Yeah, it was, I think, actually. Ladies and gentlemen, yeah, it's called Pens for Pennies. It was on Tedium.co. Pens for Pennies. How cheap ballpoint pens, which are easy to lose and easy to make, change the world due to their sheer disposability. On Tedium, the boring Tedium. Side.
And also the space pen, the one that could, the first one to write upside down.
Yeah. Actually, in the early days, all ballpoint pens could write upside down because of capillary action. But the company that, you'll learn this in this article, that owned the patent on that, Bureau, kept the patent. And so they couldn't copy it with these other pens. Anyway, it's a fascinating.
Wow.
Story. Yeah. It'll put you right to sleep if you have any difficulty. You'll find Dick and his podcast, gizwiz.tv is the podcast where they talk about stuff like this all the time. He also has a great website where you can find details about the Arctic cooler and other stuff, all the stuff he talks about on this show and many others, because he, frankly, is promiscuous and appears on many shows. It's all right. I've come to grips with that fact. You will also find there the fabulous What the Heck Is It contest, a chance to play a little game and win a copy, autographed copy of Mad Magazine, autographed by this guy right here, Dick DiBartolo. So thank you, Dick, and I will see you later, my friend.
Very good. I'll be here.
All right. Hey, I'm out of time. Thank you so much for being here. Thanks to musical director Michael Cozio, to Kim Schaffer for answering the phones. Most importantly, thanks to you for joining me, Leo Laporte, the Tech Guy. Well, that's it for the Tech Guy show for today. Thank you so much for being here. And don't forget, TWIT, T-W-I-T. It stands for This Week in Tech, and you'll find it at twit.tv, including the podcasts for this show. We talk about Windows on Windows Weekly, Macintosh on Mac Break Weekly, iPads, iPhones, Apple Watches on iOS Today, Security on Security Now. I mean, I can go on and on and on. And, of course, the big show every Sunday afternoon, This Week in Tech. You'll find it all at twit.tv. And I'll be back next week with another great Tech Guys show. Thanks for joining me. We'll see you next time.